You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm walking into my kitchen, doing my morning routine. I'm going to make some coffee. And I come in here, and here's my lovely wife. What are you doing, honey?
I'm making chai.
You're making chai. What are you putting in your chai?
I'm going to put some oat milk.
And what compelled you to put oatly in your chai instead of, say, soy milk, which we've had around, or almond milk, or skim milk, which we also have? Why are you putting oatly in there?
Well, I don't like cow milk, and almond milk was too watery, and I needed something that made my chai creamy but wasn't too sweet. And oatly was what
You sound like a pretty finicky and hard to sell to consumer to me.
I am very picky. And I think if you have things that you really enjoy, they should be the way you like them.
Okay. I'm going to pour some coffee into a cup and add a little bit of oatly to it. That is not a complex process. Though oatly is a complex proposition in a lot of ways. It's a interesting light blue carton with black and white marketing lingo all over it. This oat milk has a mission statement on the side. The reckless pursuit of profits without any consideration for the well-being of the planet and the humans that live here should be considered a crime. Companies have as much responsibility as politicians for building a society the rest of the world can admire. Bigfoot, the legendary Sasquatch, is real. Okay, blah, blah, blah. That is quite a mission statement and not something I'm used to seeing on the side of any products, but now I'm curious. I want to know more about this company. I want to know about this little Oatly that is claiming to change the world with a carton and some liquid and an outlook that is uncompromising and inclusive. And I think maybe this podcast has to do some digging into the history of Oatly. So let's get started. Welcome to Crash Course, a podcast about business, political, and social disruption, and what we can learn from it. I'm Tim O'Brien. This week's collision, Oatly versus Big Milk. It's hard for little companies to take on huge competitors, especially in an industry like Big Milk, which has a long-standing grip on consumers' diets and lifestyles. It takes attitude to consider yourself a revolutionary force rather than just a carton of milk. It takes courage and vision to create a whole new food category. And yet, Oatly is one of those companies. It's a pioneer. But it has struggled with growth and competition recently. Oatly's story will make you think about what food you put in your body, how Big Milk markets its wares, and whether Oatly can live up to its promises. To begin trying to understand Oatly's story, I went right to the top, to Tony Peterson, the company's CEO.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Tony.
Tony's an engaging Swede who had no experience in the milk industry when he decided a decade ago that Oatly was going to take on the world. I had two lengthy conversations with Tony over the last year. When we chatted most recently, I had Oatly's survival on my mind. And I asked Tony to think about both the company's and his own legacies.
We are addressing one of humanity's greatest challenges, right? Which is to feed a growing population over time within the planetary boundaries. And we are a part of that solution, which means that, you know, we are actually providing a solution to that, to change that food system.
Oatly, like other hot startups, has been burdened by its own success. It created a new food category, oat milk, that invited big competitors onto its turf. Its popularity also meant it had trouble keeping up with demand,
disappointing consumers who found themselves staring at empty store shelves. The company's stock and its standing took hits. So how long can Oatly keep fighting? Every small business, no matter how bright its prospects, needs great management. That was true of Oatly, which ran through a series of CEOs as it built its business in Sweden. In 2012, it decided it needed something more. Somebody who could shake things up. That guy turned out to be Tony Peterson. He was definitely an out-of-the-box pick.
When I was a teenager, I thought I was going to be a pop star, sort of. So me and my friend, when I was 18 and we ended high school, the first thing we did was to buy this music studio. I'm by no means a musician, but I love making music. So I thought I was going to do that.
I saw your Super Bowl ad, so I know you're not a musician.
Yeah, right? So you, naively, you had like hopes, right?
You may not know who Tony is, but I'm sure you remember his ad.
It's like milk, made for humans.
Tony popped up on tens of millions of TV screens sitting at a synthesizer in the middle of an oat field with a carton of Oatly, singing really badly during the Super Bowl.
Wow, no cow. No. Wow.
Everyone seemed to hate that ad, just as the company expected. It had printed up T-shirts in advance saying, "I totally hated that Oatly commercial." I mean, who does that? Oatly does that. And Tony and his merry band of pranksters had firm ideas about why. Lots of people who work for Oatly consider themselves rule breakers, including Tony. Oatly was Tony's first corporate job. In other words, his first corporate job was as a CEO. How often does that happen? Prior to that, he was an entrepreneur running successful restaurants and retail businesses.
You start to question the life you're living, right? And you want to achieve things in life besides just work.
Tony was looking for a calling when someone came calling.
A headhunter firm called me. I met them in Malmö. I went to their office, and they actually had a company there. It was black and white, and it was a picture of a factory, and it said Oatly. I had no clue what that was. I just knew that I didn't want to run a factory for an American cereal company, which I thought it was back then.
He found out Oatly was actually Swedish. That was good. So he kept meeting with them. He didn't really want the job at first. Then, suddenly, he did.
The more I learned about it, I just realized that, hey, I mean, this is something that the whole world needs. You know, it is something that is probably relevant to 99% of the population, but yet unknown to the 99% of the population.
Oatly started in, of all places, a Swedish lab run by a quiet food scientist named Rickard Oste. Rickard doesn't like to talk to journalists, but his brother Bjorn, a successful software entrepreneur, hopped onto a Zoom with me. He describes Rickard as a determined perfectionist, the kind of guy who winds up inventing an alternative to milk in a country that didn't really need an alternative to milk, at least not until people realized an alternative existed.
And I would say the number one design criteria overreaching everything else was that it had to taste well. I mean, if it doesn't taste great, forget it, right?
And the Aussies were a close-knit family. So as Rickard was iterating,
trial and horror, as we call it,
they gathered at their family cabin in northern Sweden and kept experimenting with their recipe until it tasted just right. And then they took it to market. After their oat milk started selling, the Aussies formed a partnership with Danone, a titan of the food and beverage industry. But that quickly soured due to what Rickard describes as Danone's infatuation with consumer testing and an aversion to risk.
If you ever go out and ask consumers what they want, well, you're already behind, right? That's not a leadership position. If you want to be a leader, you don't ask consumers what they want. You surprise them. You give them something they didn't know they wanted.
Bjorn's a wise man. What he said smacks of an apocryphal Henry Ford quote. If I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. Or even Steve Jobs. Customers don't know what they want until we've shown them. This all rings true to me. great entrepreneurs chart their own courses. And that's exactly what Oatly would go on to do, all the way to an initial public offering in the U.S.
I didn't go into this thinking, you know, we're going to do a $10 billion IPO in a few years, and far from it.
It was Tony Peterson who paved the road to that IPO. When he met Bjorn, Rikard, and board members during his job interview, growth was all they cared about. And Tony still didn't really know how to deliver growth.
I have to be honest. Like, hey, I have no clue. Like, I think I have an idea, but I will, like, I'm a consumer. I've never been in the food industry, but I have some ideas of how we can do that. And I do believe it's achievable somehow, you know, but just give me some time.
Can you believe that? This company is asking this guy to deliver growth, and he's saying, I'm not sure how I'll do that. I'll give Tony props for raw honesty, but this must have been kind of a weird interview. Even Bjorn, who was rooting for Tony, knew Tony was a tough candidate to pitch.
I could not present his resume to the board, right? He was literally unsellable to the board.
Tony had no idea how the food industry worked. And that, as it turned out, made him a great candidate and manager. He already knew how to sell things. And his lack of experience actually made him fearless. You don't really worry about sprinting past the big milk geezers if you don't know much about their business anyway. Bjorn convinced Oatly's directors to take a chance and hire Tony precisely because he was an out-of-the-box candidate. And Tony quickly went about reframing the board's expectations. Instead of saying he would hit growth targets in 3 years, he promised to do it in 4. The board said fine, but had caveats.
One was you can only operate in Europe. And the other was you can never go against cow's milk. Those were the restrictions.
In short order, Tony went about blowing off these restrictions. I'll come back to that later. To help shake up things at Oatly, Tony recruited an old friend, John Schoolcraft, a veteran marketer. He made John Oatly's chief creative officer. John was just as unusual a newcomer to Oatly as Tony. John told me he didn't like working in-house for companies and says he still doesn't trust most corporations. And here he was, working in-house for a corporation. But he was in on the joke. He renamed Oatly's marketing team, I kid you not, the Department of Mind Control. How can you not love these guys?
I think some people actually have taken that really serious. Like, what do they think they're doing? But it's just like, you know, us fucking around with what we're given.
John was nobody's fool. He was completely serious about his marketing philosophy, being as human as possible. That meant making a lot of their marketing decisions around what they thought was funny. It also meant shredding bureaucratic layers, moving quickly, and breaking things, like one of the 2 rules the board had given them. The one that said, don't diss Big Milk and its lovable cows. Lo and behold, when Tony and John overhauled Oatly's website in 2014, they proclaimed their drink was milk, but made for humans.
We went out big, and I don't know, 3-4 weeks later, we got sued by the dairy industry.
The lawsuit alleged that Oatly had sullied the entire Swedish milk industry by suggesting that there were healthier and greener alternatives to the stuff they were peddling. And, the dairy giants pointed out, what Oatly was selling wasn't actually even milk. Tony and John were in Tony's office when the Bible-sized lawsuit landed with a thunk on a desk.
I started laughing. I just started laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. I looked at it, it's like, what? It's 174 pages.
It was pretty thick. And John started to laugh. And I was like, oh my God, all right, okay, let's see where this is gonna take us.
The lawyer came in and said, John, I want you to go through this entire lawsuit and I want you to write me explanations to every line they object to, because I need to know what you were thinking, how you were thinking, how you wrote it, etc. And it became very less funny after that.
I think they understood, were aware of their weaknesses in the concept of cow's milk, for sure. And they've always been aware of it. And they wanted to kill things at early stage. And usually when those things happen, companies back down because that industry is so big. The difference here was that we didn't back down.
What they did is they forced us to become what I think we've become very good at is any kind of adversity, we take it on as a new brief. So it was like, they sued us, fine. We'll take the lawsuit, we'll put it on the internet so everyone can read it, and we'll take out full page ads in all the morning papers saying the dairy industry feels really threatened. They hit us with this lawsuit.
Big Milk prevailed in court. Oatly had to stop calling its product milk and was ordered to stop disparaging the dairy industry. So maybe a big win for Big Milk? Bjorn Oste doesn't think so, especially since the lawsuit gave Oatly lots of free publicity.
They lost the hearts and minds of the consumers. And I think they learned that it's not a way forward. They just have to learn to be competitive and fight on equal terms. They can't kill competition through the courtroom. And in fact, they lost a lot of the consumer followings that way. And it was the classic David versus Goliath.
David was now ready for bigger battles. Oatly wasn't just popular in Sweden anymore. It now had fans all over Europe. And Tony and John decided to break their board's second rule by setting their sights across the pond to one of the world's biggest milk markets, the United States.
That was such a monumental turning point. And then it just started to get really fun after that.
I'll bring you that story after the break.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Okay, I'm back in my house again, and I'm going to try to trap my wife, Devin, in the kitchen. Hi.
Hi, love.
And I'm going to talk to her more about milk, and specifically about the memories you have of milk as a kid. You know, I remember these little comforting cartons of milk, either in blue and white cartons or red and white cartons, that we would stick a little straw in when I was maybe in kindergarten through second grade, at least, maybe third. And it was part of our lunches every day. And it's a distinct part of my memories as a kid. Do you have those memories?
I certainly remember the little cartons. I always wanted the chocolate milk, not the white milk, because I didn't like white milk. And I do remember hearing that it was like the healthiest thing you could have, and you have to have milk every day. And I don't remember getting a lot of milk to drink as a kid, but I do remember it like the school lunches, and I remember it for cereal. I never really liked drinking it though.
Do you remember like it was healthy though? Like, do you remember like it was core to your health to have milk?
100%. It's the only way you could have strong bones and, you know, good eyesight and good skin. I mean, you had to drink milk. That was what you did.
What I didn't really know as a little kid was that great forces were at work making sure I got that milk, including the President of the United States.
I want to say a few words this morning about a very important subject to us all, and that is milk. I have long been convinced that milk is an important aid to good health. This has led me to direct that milk be served at every White House meal from now on.
That's JFK speaking in 1962 at a national conference on milk and nutrition. I mean, how often do you hear presidents going out of their way to sing the praises of food?
I hope more and more children will be able to receive school milk and lunches in the day ahead.
The coolest president of the jet set era, the same leader who worried about nuclear annihilation and winning the space race, he's also at the most boring conference imaginable, and he's hawking milk. My 21st century ears find that 20th century speech to be alternatively hokey and charming. Everybody had clarity. Americans believed back then that milk was a power food for them and their kids. They made it a staple of school lunches. Milk was also marketed ubiquitously in the decades before and after JFK gave that speech, making it a fixture in consumers' minds. Here's a TV ad from the 1950s.
Oh, I'll command all my subjects to drink at least 3 glasses of delicious Borden's milk each day.
Milk was that rare food that had become almost mythic in American life. Nutritional legends and an industry had sprung up around it. Oatly would be taking on all of that when it came to America. It would also discover that once it began trying to pop some of milk's balloons, it would become a target itself. To understand what Oatly was up against, I needed to learn more about how plain old cow's milk came to be so celebrated here. Vitamins played a big role. The scientist who discovered vitamin D made milk one of his specialties, winning the allegiance of the dairy industry. They helped fund some of his research. The scientist was happy to return the favor, publicly praising milk as the greatest of all protective foods. Kendra Smith Howard is a history professor at SUNY Albany and has written extensively about milk.
The notion that milk was a pure and complete food, what at the time was called nature's perfect food, has sugars, it has proteins, it has fats, and now it also has this vitamin content. All of those components really help put milk in a positive nutritional light in the first few decades of the 20th century.
Kendra said this kind of research helped create a boom in milk sales. Washington also fell under milk's spell. Dairy farmers were in almost every state, and that translated into political clout and protection in Congress. Washington also put milk at center stage by including it in the federal school lunch programs it introduced in the 1940s.
So that, again, adds a stamp of endorsement and familiarity with milk that not all products received. And so I think that also elevates milk's sort of nutritional credibility in the eyes of many Americans.
The USDA also marketed milk as one of 4 basic and essential food groups. I don't know how one white liquid makes for an entire food group, but the campaign worked. Whole milk consumption in the U.S. soared in the first half of the 20th century, but then began a steady decline after that, as alternatives became more popular and as eating habits changed. Consumption of all forms of fluid milk is now about a third of what it was at its peak in 1945. To chat about the current state of the milk business, I called Paul Zimnisky. He's the Executive Vice President of Global Innovation at Dairy Management, Inc., a trade association that receives some funding from the government. He says the traditional milk business still stands strong, and he compared it to another industry facing competitive threats.
When you look at the automotive space, right, where you've had the evolution from like the F-150, now you've got the Broncos coming in, you've got the electric cars coming in, but F-150 still drives the category. Fluid milk still 92% of households, despite massive innovation in the coffee space, massive innovation in water.
And what about massive innovation in milk alternatives, like Oatly?
I think everything's a competitor, but it's not a nutritional threat.
Maybe that's the case, but milk's own nutritional value has never been as robust as the industry would have you believe. I turned to Marion Nessel, a noted nutritionist and former public health professor at New York University, for her thoughts.
You know, everybody kind of assumed that you have to eat dairy products and that you have to have 2 or 3 servings a day of dairy products or you're going to be missing out on essential nutrients.
But
the idea that milk was an essential food was really not backed up by research. You can have a perfectly healthy diet without having dairy products at all.
Is Oatly any better? Some critics have complained that Oatly is high in sugar and is not a magical nutrition drink. Oatly thinks otherwise and complains that some regulators even forbid it from promoting its benefits.
We can't even in Sweden say that oats are good. We are not entitled to say that, even though that's true and that everybody knows it. We are not allowed to say even that. Then we as a company, we conducted 8 clinical studies so far that is related to the fibers. So we actually do have a claim in Europe stating that if you drink 3 glasses of Oatly, it's healthy for you.
All of these disputed health claims aside, milk remains a huge market with yearly sales of about $27 billion. Competition for shelf space in grocery stores is fierce, with big retailers like Walmart bottling and selling their own milk. When Oatly came on the scene in the U.S. just 5 years ago, alternatives weren't considered a realistic business for the milk giants, much less a competitive threat. Grocery stores looked at it in the same way. Oatly decided its best move would be to blow off grocery stores entirely. To learn more about what convinced the company to take that risk, I drove down to Millville, New Jersey, to an Oatly plant there. It was on a quiet road just off the highway. It wasn't at all what I expected. I grew up in Northern Illinois, and we would go on family trips to Wisconsin, so I'm used to seeing the big milk-esque silos that you see at dairy farms. So from the outside, this looks like sort of like a dairy farm, except there's no cows, there's no barns, there's no standard farmhouses or any other stuff that you see around old school farms. This is all brand spanking new stainless steel and warehousing. I walked inside and met Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Mike.
Hey,
Tim O'Brien.
Nice to meet you, Tim.
Thanks for giving us your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Come on in.
Mike Messersmith is Oatly's president of North American business. And I wanted to talk to him to understand how the oat milk gets made. The story of how Oatly's David has been able to take on the big milk Goliath is still a hard one for Mike to wrap his head around.
We're making several hundred thousand liters a day. That was a number that if you'd asked me years ago would have been beyond my comprehension, to be honest, because we started with literally 10 coffee shops that were carrying our product back in 2017. I was the third employee in the U.S. organization. I used to carry oat milk around in my backpack around New York City trying to get coffee shops to carry the product.
Coffee shops, not grocery stores, because the real coffee gourmands are in the shops, not the stores. And Mike, like his boss Tony, knew they had to enchant baristas. Tony had seen that strategy in action once before back in Sweden.
I had restaurants and bars, and how liquor companies are building their brand is behind the bars. That's how you build brands, because advertising has been very limited, especially in Sweden.
A liquor company wouldn't just spend money on billboards and commercials. They would go talk to the people serving the drinks, bartenders. They would convince bartenders that their product was the best. And bartenders would recommend their liquor to customers. In Oatly's case, they targeted baristas instead of bartenders.
We knew one thing, that the barista community has such a high integrity when it comes to quality and what they want to serve. They simply want to make the best coffee ever. So you can't go in there and sell shit, if you see what I'm saying. You have to sell the best. You can't even tell them that I want to sell this to you. The only thing we could do is knock on the doors and tell them, hey, if you want, please try this and let us know what you think about it. And we used people that were from this community to approach these coffee shops. And that's how we all started.
That's where Mike came in. His team in New York City would fill their bags with Oatly cartons, get on the subway, and visit coffee shops.
And the key thing is that we weren't going in there to try to sell anything. There was a need, a market need, for these high-end specialty coffee shops who had gone to extensive lengths of sourcing this incredible coffee from all these incredible origins, roasted to perfection, ground for these drinks, and yet they had more and more people coming into their coffee shops looking for plant-based options. And, you know, they don't want soy milk. Almond milk is too thin. It doesn't foam. It doesn't do justice.
And so when you went in there, did they look at you like you guys were crazy? Like, what was the pitch?
I mean, it was literally like you take the carton out, be like, we work for this oat milk company. Do you want to try it? And like, you don't have big PowerPoint decks or binders of things. You don't have coupons. Literally, the litmus test for success is take the carton. We'd order a couple of drinks and then they would try it. Like, wow, like that's better.
This was the summer of 2017. There weren't any other oat milks on the market. Oatly was really the only option out there.
And I think those initial reactions was such a, you know, before we had built factories, before we had done any of these other pieces, the validation of seeing the kind of immediate response from very educated, high barrier to adoption, like customer base was thrilling for us.
So the baristas were on board. Oatly started being served in specialty coffee shops. The first phase of the guerrilla marketing was complete. The next phase is probably familiar to anyone listening in a major city like New York or Los Angeles. Oatly ads started popping up in the strangest of places.
The first thing we did is what we call like the Island of Misfit Toys strategy.
Well, that's John Schoolcraft again, the head of Oatly's Department of Mind Control. If you've never heard of the Misfit Toys strategy, you're not alone. The media agencies John spoke to were also confused.
They're like, what? It's like, what is the media that nobody wants? You got a guy down in the basement booking media and no one calls him anymore. So he's just sitting down there alone. And they were like, no one wants to buy the bus fronts. And so he said, okay, we'll take them all.
Oatly put advertisements on the front of 9,000 buses in New York City and LA.
If the fronts of the buses in New York are different, you'll never notice them. But if you have them all, and there were 30 different headlines, and people walked around and collected them. Like, what's the next one say? Have I seen that one?
So whether people were learning about Oatly from their local barista or watching the fronts of buses as they whizzed by, the company was building a customer base.
And it took off very quickly, way faster than we ever anticipated. And we ran out of oat milk.
That was just the beginning of Oatly's production woes. Oatly was growing incredibly fast. And it seemed like oat milk was everywhere, but it was also nowhere. They had incredible production snafus that would stifle its growth against competitors. But investors didn't necessarily see that as a problem at this point. Oatly had built a market for a product that didn't exist, and it was popular. So, of course, all signs pointed toward a natural next step, taking this private company public. I'll bring you that story after the break.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Okay, I'm heading into my kitchen for a third and final time, at least for this podcast, not my life, because we sort of live in our kitchen. But I'm coming in here again to grill my wife, Devin. The thing I want to ask you about now is how you first became aware of Oatly. Like, when did it land in your consciousness?
I think I first heard about it right before COVID or right when COVID hit, like 2020, 2019. I was always looking for a really good milk substitute because for certain things, I just think you need something that's like milk, but I didn't want to actually buy milk.
And did you talk to friends about it? Did you see it on store shelves? Did you become aware of it through ads? Like, how did you become aware of Oatly specifically?
I think I saw it on the store shelves after a friend mentioned it to me. Actually, I think it was my aunt mentioned it to me. And then she said this was the best she'd found. And so I went and found it and I started using it. And then during COVID, I noticed it was really hard to find. And sometimes I would go to the store and it wasn't there. Like there'd be a whole shelf and it would be empty. So I knew then to stock up every time I found it.
Devin wasn't alone. Oatly was getting a lot of attention by the time the pandemic hit. And it had some big time investors. Oprah Winfrey, Natalie Portman, Jay-Z, and the former CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz. They all backed Oatly. But Oatly needed more capital to keep growing. So Tony decided to take the next step and go public.
We need the proceeds to expand our production capacities across these three continents. If you think about what we do, we build demand across three continents successfully, you know, multiple channels from niche to mass, and generating a demand that we haven't been able to supply.
That's Tony on Bloomberg TV on May 20th, 2021, when Oatly's IPO valued the company at $10 billion. Tony was elated, but also cautious.
This is just the beginning. This is the beginning of a long, long journey, an incredible journey, and a massive opportunity, you know. So I am so happy to sit here with you guys today and just, you know, being where we are. But it is about the long term.
Oatly debuted at $17 a share. By the end of the day, the stock had jumped to over $22. A couple weeks later, it reached what, in hindsight, turned out to be its peak, nearly $29. Let's take a minute to reflect on when all of this was going on, May of 2021. You may have been preoccupied with the buzz of vaccine availability more than a year into the pandemic, but Wall Street was buzzing with IPOs. It was a record-breaking year for companies going public. The market was bubbling in this gold rush, yet Tony's visions for Oatly's future seemed within reach, especially because investors were swooning over plant-based foods. Oatly needed more capital to take on the milk giants, and they were going to get it. It raised $1.4 billion on IPO day to work toward that goal.
We're positioning ourselves to take a global leadership.
This is Tony again on Bloomberg TV.
We're determined to lead this revolution forward, and it will evolve. You're right, it will evolve, and we are going to lead that. You know, if you think about what we do here, building the demand across three continents with organization and supply and everything, we are positioned to take this to the next level. I feel pretty good about it, to be honest.
Tony felt good about it, but the stock market is a fickle suitor. Over the next year, many young companies the market once adored fell out of favor. Oatly was one of them. In May of 2022, just a year after that hot IPO, Oatly shares had plunged to $3.66. Not even enough to buy one carton of Oatly. The stock price has only gone down from there. Shortly before we published this podcast, the stock was hovering around $2 a share. Some of that was beyond Oatly's control.
You have to remember, we made the IPO hitting a series of macro events that was and still is unprecedented. I haven't heard of any other company with own production at that scale and growth rate making an IPO and then immediately hitting those types of events. Ever.
It was quite a roster of macro events. A pandemic, Putin invading Ukraine, soaring inflation, buckling supply chains. Despite those headwinds, Tony doesn't have any regrets about going public, but he has his work cut out for him.
This was a platform for us to become a global brand, and the IPO was part of that. But eventually you have to be profitable, right? You don't just want to run a high growth company forever and not ever make money. You have to do that.
Going public not only subjected Oatly to the vagaries of the stock market, it invited a whole new set of big investors, some of whom proved controversial. The big private equity firm Blackstone and a Chinese state agency took stakes in Oatly. Oatly fans said the investments represented a betrayal of the company's core values. Blackstone was seen as environmentally hostile, and China was seen as politically oppressive. Tony disagrees. Most small companies that want to grow larger have to tap public markets with all of their complexities, including outside investors. None of that he says, has disrupted Oatly's mission.
We can't live in an isolated parallel universe, right? We live in this system. So this is about how do we bring everybody on board? How do we make everybody understand? But more importantly, what are the mechanisms for change, right? So to me, it's always about impact. For us, it's also about education. What does sustainability mean? What can company do? And we're not alone in this, but we are part of educating authorities and stakeholders about what is sustainability. And how do you actually make an impact, which is the most important thing?
Oatly's had another challenge, finicky consumers.
The truth is that oat milk is no longer as like sexy as it was a couple of years ago when it first arrived. They are no longer the only oat milk at the supermarket.
This is Dina Shanker. She covers food and agriculture here at Bloomberg. And she says that after the initial hype around Oatly, the market became saturated with different kinds of oat milk, and Oatly couldn't keep up.
There was a time when people were reportedly, anecdotally, you know, going from one coffee shop to the next looking for Oatly. I don't think people are going to do that anymore, especially because the coffee shop might not have Oatly, but they'll have some oat milk. And so you'll say, okay, sure.
Dina thinks Oatly fell short because they got too big, too fast, and lost focus. The company was more obsessed with making sure people knew about Oatly rather than ensuring there was enough Oatly. In 2022, Oatly only captured about 24% of the retail sales in the oat milk market, so only a quarter of the very same market it created.
Every time a customer walks into the supermarket and can't get Oatly and buys something else, they're losing a sale. So they're losing market share. They had the entire market, and then they have just been losing it ever since then.
The clock is ticking to a certain extent on them. How long is it before investors and competitors make them fold?
I wouldn't put like a deadline on Oatly. What I would say is that Oatly has benefited from being able to rely on the COVID excuse. Our supply chain problems are from COVID. Our factory isn't up and running because of the pandemic. I think that that excuse is basically has pretty much run its course.
By the way, meeting demand isn't Oatly's only problem. As the company grew, it also came under fire for sometimes not being as environmentally friendly as it claimed to be. A Wall Street Journal article recounted how local officials who live near Oatly's New Jersey plant were outraged about how much wastewater the plant was producing. Oatly ended up trucking its runoff out of the state for a while as a solution, and Mike Messersmith told me the company has since gone out of its way to reassure the locals.
And now we've invested millions of dollars in that on-site wastewater treatment facility, and it discharges directly to the city system with no issue.
When I asked Mike about that journal article, he didn't dispute its conclusions, but also pointed out how hard it is to start businesses from scratch.
Building things that didn't exist before is really hard. And I think that there can be elements of humility and transparency in trying to build something that, you know, it doesn't always go exactly as we plan, and we have to continue to push.
So Oatly's pushing forward, and it says it's finally sorting out its production problems. It forged a partnership with an experienced packaging company, Yaya Foods, in an effort to streamline its operations. Maybe it'll even be able to get ahead of demand. The clock is certainly ticking, though. You see, most small companies get a lot of attention at their IPOs, but then disappear. It's a fact of life. When a company is successful, it's not usually because it stayed true to itself. Wall Street changes a company. It has to. There's a ton of pressure from big investors and from the extra media attention. Oftentimes, companies cave. They'll bring in plain vanilla people to run the company safely. Which is all well and good for some plain vanilla companies. But that's not what makes Oatly, Oatly. It's known for its eye-catching cartons and its quirky ads, for the Department of Mind Control, and its avoidance of bureaucratic barriers. Can everything that makes Oatly fun and interesting survive Wall Street? Can Tony?
There are going to be challenges along the way, and we faced criticism in the past. That's never deterred us from the mission. What it's teaching us is resilience. And no one knows more about the positives of this company than our own team, right? Our wins, our successes, our benefits, what we actually do within the company, the pioneering approach we take to challenge thrown our way, you know? We're going to continue to have that approach, stay true to our mission, and have true ambitions to try to do the right things, knowing that we will never be a perfect company, because you can't be that, but to have genuine ambitions about wanting to do good, and that is then converted to action, that we're going to stay true to.
And I know one customer who plans to stay true to Tony's Oat Milk.
So do you consider yourself a loyal Oatly drinker?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not loyal to a lot of things, but this is the one thing that really works for me. And I know what I'm getting when I buy it.
So Oatly forever.
Oatly forever. Unless they change the formula, don't change the formula.
What if it just can't stay afloat, so to speak, in this brutal American consumer market?
Is there not enough trouble in the world? I don't know. I guess I'd keep searching for something else or find the next best thing, but it won't be the same.
Here at Crash Course, we believe that collisions can be messy, impressive, challenging, surprising, and always instructive. In today's Crash Course, I learned that being a quirky, daring pioneer can be a magical, exciting thing. Being a pioneer is also perilous. Your own growth and popularity can consume you. And holding on to your identity and your mission can be really, really hard. Let's see what Oatly has in store for us. What did you learn? We'd love to hear from you. You can tweet at the Bloomberg Opinion handle, at Opinion, or me, at Tim O'Brien, using the hashtag Bloomberg Crash Course. You can also subscribe to our show wherever you're listening right now and leave us a review. It helps more people find the show. This episode was produced by the indispensable Anna Mazarakis and me. Our supervising producer is Magnus Henriksen, and we had editing help from Samantha Story, Katie Boyce, Jeff Grocott, and Mike Nitza. Blake Maples does our sound engineering, and our original theme song was composed by Luis Guerra. I'm Tim O'Brien. We'll be back next week with another Crash Course.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.